Good Monday evening, boys and girls, and welcome to the Monday night edition of the John Henry Show. Thanks very much for joining us. I am, of course, your host, John Henry, from johnhenry.us. You can see my contact information underneath if you're watching on YouTube live. And if you are listening to the podcast later, you can find me Twitter at johnhenry_us, on the web at johnhenry.us, on Facebook at johnhenryus, on Facebook at I Loved to Wake Up in the Morning when Barack Obama was president. And of course, if you are able to support independent media, please drop me a couple of cents there at paypal.me/johnhenryus or patreon.com/johnhenry. We are talking about a whole bunch of stuff today. First and foremost, I'm going to go ahead and discuss my personal endorsement for president in the Democratic primary, which probably will be no surprise to anyone, but I would like to discuss my thinking behind that. Let me get rid of these glasses so you don't sit there looking at the glare from my TV. We are going to talk about the developments in the Democratic primary race today, and also we're going to have some words about the coronavirus and the ongoing situation with that. There's been some very interesting and disturbing developments with that over the weekend that I want to talk to you about. And if we get a chance, I'm going to have a brief conversation about some of the technology that goes into creating this program. So, first and foremost, it should come as no surprise. I've mentioned it in public before, but I don't know if those of you who are seeing me primarily on YouTube and in the podcast are aware of it, but I am endorsing Bernie Sanders for the Democratic presidential nomination and as president of the United States. Reasons for this, I guess I'm kind of in a bubble there because I'm not sure why it needs explaining, but I will. Just in case you haven't heard, Sanders has been a consistent advocate for many of the things that I myself have advocated for most of my adult life or all of my adult life. And he's been doing so, you know, quite a bit longer than I have, right? You know, he was involved in the civil rights marches in the in Chicago in the 60s. You know, his family was targeted by the Nazi war machine. He lost grandparents in concentration camps, so he's very well aware of the dark power of an easily persuaded public and of xenophobia and racism. And I think that he's a strong advocate for all of those things. I also very much support his positions on universal single-payer health care and on universal higher education. I've said it before, and I will continue to say it, I do not want to live in a nation full of sick idiots. And that is what you get when you don't have education and health care. You cannot be free if you are too sick to worry about whether or not, making an informed political decision. You cannot be free if you don't have the necessary education in critical thinking and information evaluation to see through a politician's BS. Okay. I think Sanders is a strong candidate, and thus far, you know, all of the criticisms that I've seen of him really come down to illogical thinking. I don't dislike Donald Trump because of the people that support him. I dislike Donald Trump because of his positions. I think the people that support him can reflect that. But that's not a reason for me not to like him, okay? The fact that he is loud is ridiculous. He talks like a Jewish guy from Brooklyn, just like every other Jewish guy from Brooklyn. And so that is also a non-issue for me. The fact that he's not a bullshit artist and that he's not constantly trying to pander to every possible voice. If he believes that something is wrong, he'll stand up and say so. And I think that's very important. And I think that that's something that the other candidates in the race manifestly lack. When you look at Elizabeth Warren, who is a distant second for me, she's changed position on some major issues multiple times. She's gone back and forth on health care. She's gone back and forth on the taking money from, taking big money and super PACs and things like that. And so there's one person in the race who has consistently and with integrity, supported the positions and ideologies that I believe in, and that's Bernie Sanders, and so that's who I am voting for, and I would not presume to tell you who to vote for, but I certainly hope that you will join me in casting your vote for him on Super Tuesday if you are in one of those states or in your state primary. Mine here in Michigan is on March 10th, I think, so... So that's the long and short of that. And I don't want to go a whole lot into it because frankly, anybody who's paying attention already knew that. But I wanted to go ahead and say it in public and out loud, so that there's no further question, as to, what's happening there. Let's talk about the Democratic race for a minute. You'll excuse me, please. I'm still very much fighting this respiratory infection, which we'll talk about in a minute too. The Democratic race, we have seen three candidates drop out basically over the weekend. Steyer is gone. Pete Buttigieg is gone. Amy Klobuchar is gone. Now, I do not know if it has happened yet because I've been in show prep for the last couple hours. But the last time I looked, the circulating rumor was that both Amy Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg were supposed to be flying to some kind of Biden rally in Texas to give him their endorsement. Frankly, to me, this just underscores what I've been saying all along. There is one candidate in this race who is really seriously intent on bringing serious change to a badly broken system. I understand that some people are hesitant and some people are somewhat reticent to engage in that huge change. And I'm sorry, but I disagree. It is long past time for us to make radical shifts in the way we do things in this country, okay? Many of the problems that we are discussing and that people are, you know, apparently just now becoming enlightened to are things that I have been talking about for 35 years, including, you know, the deconstruction of public education, including disinformation and misinformation by a media that is almost completely controlled by for-profit corporate interests. The flaws with for-profit healthcare, the flaws with for-profit, you know, prisons and criminal justice and everything else. The system is rigged to keep the poor people poor and make the rich people richer. And what has happened, because again, that's not a new thing to say, right? But what has happened over my lifetime since I was, say, 15 years old in 1985, is that the bottom of the economic field has fallen into complete destitution. The middle class has nearly disappeared, and the real wealth in this country has concentrated into a very, very small group of hands. There are six companies that own almost all of the media that we consume, including YouTube, by the way. There are a handful of people that really control the media narrative in this country. And so we have this illusion that there are really only two positions, and anything other than those two positions is, you know, radical or fringe or what have you. And the long-term consequence of that, again, I was talking about it for years before the phrase Overton window was coined, but what happens is you have a right and you have a left, and so the right says the left has to compromise with us in order to get anything done. So the left compromises a little bit, and then the right moves farther to the right and says, well, why don't you compromise? And the right moves a little bit, and the left moves in a little bit, and then the right moves farther to the right and farther. Now you have a Democratic Party, which used to be a fairly legitimate left wing, that is at best a moderate right, and a Republican Party that has gone completely off the right edge of the spectrum, right? The Republican Party at this point, the GOP, and not just their leadership, but basically everybody that's running as a Republican and most of the people voting for them are fascists. By definition, they are fascists. What they want is policies and systems in place that benefit large corporations and the very wealthy, and everybody else can go hang. That is not a free country. That is not a world I want to live in. Okay, it's feudalism, it's oligarchy, it's plutocracy, you know? And people like me have zero opportunities. People like you have zero opportunities in a world like that. And if you think that you do, I've got some bad news for you. You don't. Your opportunities in this system and in this culture are limited to doing what the hell you were told, and maybe you'll get rewarded with a couple of nice little shiny material things, but that's it. You are never going to be Bill Gates. You are never going to be Mike Bloomberg. You are never going to be Steyer. You are never going to be, what's his name, Berkshire Hathaway there, Warren Buffett. You're never going to be Donald Trump, okay? That is locked out to you. Like Carlin said, it's a big club and you ain't in it. And you ain't going to be. You can't get in that club, okay? But, and you know, I was thinking about this the other day because I was remembering my own thinking as a child, as I was becoming politically aware. And I remember thinking about, oh, well, we can't increase taxes on the rich because I'm going to be rich one day and I don't want to pay all those taxes. And, you know, when I was 10 years old, I fell for that. When I was 15, not so much. But it seems like there are a lot of ostensibly intelligent adults out there that do fall for that. And I am here to tell you, this is about the last chance we've got to see any real hope for the survival of democracy in the Western world, and certainly in the United States. If we try to go with some sort of moderate compromise candidate, the same thing is going to happen in 2020 that happened in 2016. And that is, the big radical hate the government types are going to win the election. They're going to reelect Donald Trump, and that's the end of the ballgame. I don't think this country can survive another 4 years of Donald Trump. In fact, I know it can't. Okay. And we're seeing that right now as it plays out with this coronavirus situation, which I'm going to talk about more as we go down the road. But I did want to, before we get into that, I want to address a couple of these narratives that I keep seeing, and some of it's from friends of mine, you know, and people that I know and people that I respect, and I don't intend any disrespect to them, but there's some things that I'm really puzzled by and I don't understand, right? The number one thing is, oh, Bernie can't beat Trump. Where the hell is that coming from? The man has won 3 out of the first 4 primaries, and he never had a snowball's chance in hell in South Carolina anyway, but he still managed to come in second. Okay, he won the popular vote in Iowa. He won both of the New Hampshire and Nevada primaries full out with both popular and delegate votes, and came in second in South Carolina. He still leads the delegate race. As you go through and look at you know, like 538.com and these other places that aggregate polls, Sanders tops almost everything. How do you get that he can't win? Every single poll of likely voters, of registered voters, of the general public, you know, in Minnesota, he's the only Democrat that comes out on top of Trump. And he comes out on top consistently. So this narrative that Bernie can't win is bullshit. Okay. Right now, Bernie Sanders' biggest enemy is not the Republican Party. It's the Democratic establishment within the party. It's the power structure within the Democratic Party. And unfortunately, they've made a mess of things. There's a saying that, you know, the Democratic Party never met an opportunity that it didn't take to snatch defeat from the jaws of victory. And it does a really good job with that. And it did it in 2016. And I told you all in 2016, before the convention, I said, if they push Hillary Clinton through to win this thing, it's a Trump win. And everybody went, oh, no, Donald Trump's never going to win. We're never going to elect an idiot like that. And when Hillary Clinton got elected, right, or when she got nominated, I said, look, we just tossed it. That's it. It's over. Trump's going to win. Oh, no, you're just a misogynist. You just hate women, blah, 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 blah. Trump's never going to win. Here we sit. And I love you guys, and I don't want to get into this blowing smoke up my own ass thing, but how many times do I have to be right before people catch on that I know what the fuck I'm talking about? This country needs radical change. We are leaving millions of people behind. That is not right. My buddy Hackman jumps in and notes, I really wish we had ranked choice voting for presidential elections. I agree. And that's actually an interesting tangent that I'll go off on for just a second. When you hear a lot about this, oh, it's all two-party stuff. It's two-party. It's two-party. It's a two-party system. It's all rigged, okay? It's not rigged. It's math. If you go look, there's a principle in political science called Duverger's Law. It's D-U-V-E-R-G-E-R, Duverger's Law. And what this tells us is that in any first-past-the-post voting system, which is what we have, first person that gets the most votes wins, right? First person past 50%, the post. In a single-member, single-district, those districts tend to coalesce into two-party systems because math, okay? And then individual candidates will occasionally reach across the aisle, blah, blah, blah. And people talk about the false left-right paradigm. That's not a false paradigm. That's the way people shake out, okay? As a general rule, people will tend to vote either in the interest of the general public, which is themselves, or they will vote in the interest of the aristocracy and the industrial class, which is the owners, okay? The people who are voting in favor of the industrial class either believe they're going to become one of them, or they believe that they will benefit. This is the trickle-down economics type of narrative, right? Oh, well, if we just cut taxes on the rich people, those savings will flow down. Well, we've been doing that since I was 10 years old. And I got nothing but piss on my head, okay? So, I think ranked choice voting could help shake up the system and could help us find a real left in this country again. And I think that's where the value in that is. But ultimately, I still think just because of, you know, branding, marketing and things like that, I still think you would end up with a two-party system and they would probably continue to call themselves Democrats and Republicans. I think if Sanders can build enough energy that the core of the Democratic Party cannot play the same game they did in 16, then you will see a pretty serious move back towards the real left by the Democratic Party, because he's going to bring in a lot of young people. He's going to bring in a lot of people that have been previously disenfranchised. He's going to empower the down ballot candidates, your state and local senators, your state governors, and your federal legislators that are on the ticket. And I think that will be the beginning of moving the Democratic Party back to being genuinely a people's party, because right now the people have no party in this country. Both political parties spend most of their time pandering to big money so they can keep it coming in, because they've bought into this illusion that they've got to have all this big money and all this big power in order to buy an election and afford the advertising and afford the marketing. It's all become a marketing game instead of what it's supposed to be, which is a contest of principles to find out who the American people think is best to lead them where or to represent their interests in going where we want to go. So thanks for bringing that up, Heck. I really appreciate that. I like Duverger's law because long before I took political science classes, I had that feeling that that whole, you know, the two-party system complaint was missing something important. And that's what it is. It's not a rigged system. Certainly, I'm sure that leadership in both parties does what they can to maintain their power. That's not what I'm saying. But I don't think that, you know, Donald Trump and Debbie Wasserman Schultz are sitting in a smoke-filled room in a pizza parlor in Washington, D.C., trying to figure out how we're going to hold on to all the power. Again, back to Carlin, it does not require a formal conspiracy when you have similar parties of similar principles and like interests working towards similar goals. Okay, that doesn't require a formal conspiracy. They don't have to talk to each other. They don't have to lay things out. They don't have to work together directly to make this happen, because it kind of happens naturally, right? And the big threat that Sanders represents is he's shaking everything up, right? He's saying, no, we don't have to do this. Here, this guy comes. He's pulling in his donations $21 at a time, $19 at a time, whatever it is, right? I think in 16 it was 27 bucks. This time it's 19, I think, is the average. He's saying, no, we actually can. And again, this is something I've said more than once. And over the years, there's more of them than there are of us. He's proving that, right? And in proving that, he's shaking up the whole system, because they're pretty comfortable right now. They're pretty fat laid back. I shouldn't say fat. That's not a word that I want to use. The fat cat imagery is the thing that was in my head there. But, you know, everybody's, oh, well, you know, it's network. Right. If you've ever seen that network, you know, Howard Beale and Ned Beatty gives that whole speech to you know, the Howard Beale character about, you know, you're playing games with this giant machine of industry and capitalism. And this is what you are opposing. There's a lot of truth there. And even though I don't think a meeting like that has ever happened, nobody has ever pulled, you know, the iconoclast into a dark room and say, hey, look, you can't win, and this is why, and I'm going to lay it out and explain it to you. Now, if you want to come and work for us and be the principal in opposition, okay. I don't think that happens. Well, I don't think it happens like that, okay? I think it does very much happen. And I think you see that happen when you've got a prominent, you know, these prominent entertainment personalities and so on and so forth, that, you know, they put forth this narrative about, oh, we've got to have this, we've got to have universal education, we've got to have universal health care, and then all of a sudden they're endorsing Mike Bloomberg. I don't think that happens on principle. I think that when you see that happening, somebody is revealing their failure of integrity and the ease with which they can be bought or manipulated into changing their mind and becoming a public mouthpiece for the aristocracy. So, again, Sanders is the one that's got it for me, and he has for a long time, and I'm going to stick with that, and I do believe he can win. Not only do I believe he can win, I think when it's all said and done, if he can get the nomination through the Democratic Party and get into the poll in November, I think you're going to see a landslide on a level that you haven't seen since Reagan, okay? I really think the dude has what it takes to get people energized and out to the polls and to make that vote happen, so... that's that story. Like I said, you've got Klobuchar, you've got Pete Buttigieg. They are going to do the right thing and play the party game. They're going to go out and endorse Biden in the hopes of coalescing the moderate wing of the Democratic Party behind Joe Biden. I could not think of a worse candidate for them to try to do that with, quite frankly. I don't dislike Joe Biden in terms of, you know, oh yeah, I'd love to have a beer with him. He's, you know, reminds me a lot of my dad and all that stuff. But he's not prepared, and he's not the person that we need to lead this country. He is a hopeful wish that we could return to the way things were, and that's not going to happen. The way things were is gone. Okay, the America that I grew up in the 70s and 80s, the America that people talk about, you know, in the 50s where we had supposedly all this affluence and so on, that's gone. And it's not going to come back, okay? All the manufacturing jobs, those are not going to come back. And frankly, they shouldn't, right? Again, Buckminster Fuller, I've mentioned him more than once on this show. He said it just fine in the 70s, this idea that people are required to validate their right to life by going out and generating income for other people is insane. Nobody, maybe one in 10,000 of us, needs to do the work that is necessary to sustain the rest of the race. And in this day and age, most of that work can be automated, right? What human beings need to do is look within themselves and get back to doing whatever it is they were doing before somebody came along and told them that they had to earn a living, okay? And so that makes for a nice segue into... the situation with the coronavirus. Last week I did a show and things were looking pretty hairy at that point, and I brought out a lot of big scary numbers and intentionally went a little bit to the hype side of things just to kind of snap people into paying attention. It worked to a certain extent. The people who are listening to me are paying attention. Unfortunately, in spite of the fact that I will continue to say over and over again that this is not the stand, we are not all going to start having dreams about Mother Abigail and the walking dude. We're not all going to start walking for Boulder or Las Vegas. That's not a thing. But it's really super interesting to me to see how some of these things play out. There was one scene in that book where I remember... there was the monster shouter. If you saw the movie, it was the guy that was played by Kareem Abdul-Jabbar walking through New York City screaming, "Bring out your dad," or whatever. And in the book, that guy got beat to death by a roving band of thugs going, "Ah, you're scaring people, blah, blah, blah." And there was a lot of that hostility toward people who were telling the truth that was displayed by the general public because they didn't want to acknowledge the truth, right? People don't like to be afraid. People don't like to be scared, and this is scary shit. Make absolutely no question about it. And so I've seen some of that hostility even, you know, in my own interactions online and watching interactions in other places where people are coming already to the point of being openly hostile to the suggestion that maybe we've got a problem. And the ignorance, the sheer stupidity from the top down with, you know, Donald Trump coming out and trying to play this off. Oh, it's all just a big joke. It's all fake news being propagated by the Democrats to make me look bad, hurt the stock market. Dude, bullshit. Are you seriously trying to tell me that an American political party is going to infect 100, last count before, a couple hours before I before I went on today, I checked the World Health Organization's daily situation report. And I think the current count is like 150,000 people that have this thing, which has doubled in like 2 days. Okay. Now, that's also not an indication of how fast it's spreading. It's an indication of they're finally starting to get a better count and get a better handle on how to count. Okay. Repeatedly, as I've talked to healthcare professionals and participated in conversations with people, I am hearing one phrase over and over again that really, really bothers me. And that phrase is woefully unprepared. I am talking to nurses and doctors who work in nursing homes and urgent care centers and in emergency rooms and in hospitals who are saying, you know what? There are no masks. The N95 masks that you keep hearing about, they aren't there, and they haven't been for weeks. There has been a shortage, and you can check the headlines because they're still out there. We were talking about this a month and a half ago, right? The middle of January already. They were saying there are shortages, and companies like 3M were increasing their production and so on and so forth, okay? And yet still, you see people, oh, well, it's just like a cold. This is not a cold, folks. And frankly, I think the chance for real containment is past. The best information, the most reliable information that I have been able to find strongly suggests that the COVID-19 virus came into this country in late January. And it's been sitting up in the Pacific Northwest incubating for a month. Okay. Now, they say the incubation period of this thing is, on average, around 6 to 14 days, but that's an average, and there are outliers. There is at least one documented case that had a 19-day incubation period, and with the guy who had that walking around in public, who knows how many people he infected, right? You are going to see people get sick. You are going to see people die from this. We've already had 6 deaths in this country. And it's going to increase. It's going to be ugly. Unfortunately, there's not a whole lot that can be done about it at this point. That horse has left the barn. It was probably already too late when I started talking about it last Friday, right? The military made an announcement 3 or 4 weeks ago. I remember catching just a little tiny story about the Fort Custer, which is an army base down the road from me in Battle Creek, Michigan. They have a bunch of decommissioned barracks over there. And I caught a little story about, well, they're opening those back up and setting them up to be a quarantine center. That was happening 5 weeks ago. Now, that tells me that somewhere somebody is seeing information that suggests that that was a necessary step. Or it may be a necessary step. Now, if they knew that 5 weeks ago, it wasn't part of the official narrative. And there may be good reasons for that, right? Including that it's not peer-reviewed research, including, okay? But the one thing that is really, really screwing this up right now is the top-down management of the narrative from the White House and the way that they are controlling information. They're in panic mode right now. Okay, they are scared to death that the public is going to find out what this thing is about and how it's going, and everybody's going to freak out. Okay, and because they don't have the expertise or the personal integrity and strength of character to stand up and tell the truth and deal with that, okay, can you imagine how a Barack Obama would deal with this situation? You don't have to, because you'll remember there was that Ebola scare where he came out and he was very measured and he was very careful in how he spoke. And he gave good information, and he did what he could to educate the public. And right now, you've got, you know, this Donald Trump idiot and the people that surround him, they are all of that management style that a lot of people call mushrooming, right? Feed you bullshit and keep you in the dark. And that's what they're doing. That is hugely dangerous, okay? Not because it's dangerous, they're not telling us the truth. What's dangerous about it is when the general public finds out that they've been lying, they're going to hit the flipping roof. And that's when you're going to start seeing people really panic. And we're already at the point, you know, just this afternoon, as I was preparing for the show, grocery stores in West Michigan are almost completely out of hand sanitizer. You can't find a N95 mask anywhere at retail or online. Amazon has suspended a million listings of people trying to profit on this. They've killed a bunch of accounts for people price gouging these things, okay? It's already starting to happen. What I am sitting here telling you is going to happen has already started. Okay. And I sent out a private message to my people over Facebook a couple of days ago already, saying, look, if you're sitting around waiting for the last moment, it's here. Go out quietly, do your shopping, get prepared, get your mind into a mindset of, I might have to stay home for a few weeks or a month. In my opinion, the government should have been telling you that at least a week and a half ago, and probably 2 weeks ago or two and a half. Okay. And this again starts going into the bigger ideological picture and the bigger questions of communication and integrity and media, you know, information evaluation that I'm always going on about. Okay. Because if we lived in a country where we had a universal single payer healthcare system, where our priority was public health over profit rather than the other way around, where the priority was educating the public and trusting them to be reasonable and intelligent instead of the mushroom game, then maybe we would have been in a position to catch this when it started in Washington instead of waiting weeks and weeks and weeks, okay? Because the right thing to have done would have been to develop tests immediately, make them available at no cost, and get them to every point of entry. Track down every single person who has been in that part of the world, track down every single person who has talked to somebody from that part of the world, and get them tested. And we could have put the brakes on this. Now, I don't think, you know, I mentioned in my show Thursday when I ran the math, and at that time there was some estimates suggesting that the mortality rate from this thing could be as high as 15%, which is just insane. And at 15% mortality, you're talking about a billion people, right? I do not think that it's going to be like that. I don't think it's going to be anywhere close to that, but even at 2%, which is the same level as the 1918 influenza outbreak, okay? Even at that same 2% and roughly the same infection rate where it hits about a third of the population in total, you're talking about, I mean, just do the math, right? We have five times as many people on this planet now than we did in 1918. In 1918, 50 million people died and you didn't have transatlantic travel. Okay, so basic math, what's 50 times 5? 250 million people, right? 70%. Of the population of the United States worldwide, if this thing hits 1918 levels. And that is not out of the question. Unlikely, but not out of the question. And right now, I hate to say it, but going by the numbers, it's not even that unlikely. What is really scary to me is how many people I see who continue to say things like, I don't know why, it's just a cold. It's just a cold. Why is everybody so worried? This is not just a cold, kids. Okay? And yes, there is definitely a marked difference in the mortality rate when you start talking about the elderly and people who are already compromised and so on and so forth. But guess what? Yeah, think real hard about that one for a minute. Because I got to tell you, man, if I see somebody coming up to me and saying, well, you know what? I'm not that worried about it because I'm healthy and I'm 30 years old. It's just going to be old people and sick people. I'm liable to punch you in the mouth. What a dick. And that mentality is something that really, really flows through this country, right? That's the root of privilege. If it's not a problem for me, it's not a problem. That mentality is a disease that we've got really bad in this country. And, you know, the sad thing is I think what really, however this plays out, whatever level it gets to in terms of the numbers, what you are absolutely going to see is countries like Sweden, Finland, Denmark, Germany, the Netherlands, that have good, strong, socialized, universal healthcare systems, are going to be impacted much less than the United States. Because in those countries, you're not seeing people go, this is nothing to worry about. In those countries, you're not seeing people who take pride in their ignorant cynicism. It's like, oh, well, you know, it's just the CDC. They don't know what they're talking about. It's all political game, blah, 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 blah. Everybody's so damn smart. Everybody's got to be too cool to be worried. We're all, again, ego, man. And that's one of those recurring themes, one of those things that I learned from being a big Bill Hicks fan, you know, the egos of the world. And people just, everybody's always got to look cool. Everybody's got to always be a little bit too chill. Oh, don't worry about it, man. It's good. It's good. We got this. We don't got this at all, okay? It's sad because we have the tools. You know, it's not like we're stupid per se, but we've been so radically miseducated and misguided and wrapped up into these silly partisan arguments where everybody's got to try to be clever and slick and find that underlying political, ulterior motive for everything that is said. The reality is we got a problem on our hands. There's some legitimate news out there that is really troubling, not in terms of the scope and scale of this particular disease, but in terms of the way our government is handling it, right? I'm seeing multiple reports that the CDC is not giving information to doctors. That is unprecedented and unprecedentedly stupid. And that's coming from the top, right? They don't want that information getting out into the hands of doctors because sooner or later it's going to get in the hands of a doctor who has a conscience and he's going to go public with it. And that's going to hurt the stock market. Capitalism, folks. That's what's driving this. And it's going to kill us. And it's going to kill people you know before it's done. I guarantee it. Okay? This is right now. This is the moment in history. Okay? And I've been saying it. And people aren't listening. They think it's just a little meme. They think it's just a little bumper sticker slogan. No, I am telling you, every time in your life you have sat there and gone, well, you know, if I had been in the Civil War, I would have done this. If I had been in World War II, I had done this. If I was a German in 1933, I would have, you're there now. And what you're doing is exactly what you are complaining about them doing then. Nothing. Sitting here blowing smoke up your own ass trying to be the coolest guy on the block instead of having the balls to look out to the world and say, admit, hey, you know what? This is kind of screwed up and I'm a little scared. Get your damn ego out of the way. And please, man, you know, I don't know how to say this politely, okay, but we are suffering from a major nationwide case of Dunning-Kruger effect. The Dunning-Kruger effect is named for the scientists who wrote a report about 10 or 15 years ago, the title of the report was Unskilled and Unaware of It. And the long and short of it is something that you already know, which is that the stupider people get, the less able they are to tell how stupid they are. They don't realize, okay? The more intelligent people get, the more they doubt themselves. And the Dunning-Kruger effect was just sort of the academic expression of that reality. And so now what you're seeing is you've got all these people with the big mouths. Oh, blah, 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 blah. Well, you know what? I make a bunch of money and I got a big truck and I got some guns and I got a boat and that makes me smart. No, it doesn't make you smart. It certainly doesn't make you qualified to run your damn mouth. I'm certainly not an expert in communicable diseases. I've done a lot to learn, especially in the last week, so that I don't misinform people, okay? But what I'm talking about is people who know better. They know what they're doing. In their hearts, I believe these people understand what they're doing and what they're saying out there, right? When somebody is coming out going, well, you need to stop with the fear-mongering. What they're really saying is, I'm scared and I don't want to hear it and I don't know how to deal with it. Okay, then shut up. Don't say anything. Because you don't know. And your big mouth is going to get somebody killed. That is what I'm telling you. It is time to end this shit. It is time to stop. And I don't want to hurt feelings. And I know that I've got friends out there who some of this stuff applies to who are going to be like, well, screw you, John. You're not my friend anymore. I'm sorry. I don't want to lose your friendship. I don't hate you as a person. But shut up. You're going to hurt people. You're going to hurt people you love, maybe even yourself. Shut up. Pay attention. Yes, by all means, have some skepticism, but apply critical thought to it. You can look around. You can see the numbers. You can see the information, okay? When the president can't manage to get straight whether the first patient who died in Washington State was male or female, there's probably some confusion behind the scenes. when the numbers double in 2 days, that's a pretty good sign that we weren't counting right in the first place. And it's a pretty good sign that maybe we're still not. Okay? Now again, I'm not trying to scare the hell out of anybody. I'm not trying to suggest that this is the stand. You know, there's nothing supernatural going around here. Oh, and that reminds me, if I see one more person come up with this crap, oh yeah, the Chinese did this on purpose. You dumb shit, shut up. No, the Chinese didn't do this on purpose. The Chinese didn't do this. This is not a human engineered vaccine. There is no evidence for that. None at all. And if you see anything that claims to be evidence for that, if you've got any wit about you and read through it, you will see there's a whole lot of holes in that evidence. Not a thing. This was not an engineered virus. It's not a bio attack. It's not an intentional attempt to undermine the United States by the Chinese. Shut up. All you are saying to me when I start hearing that crap come out of your mouth is that you're a fucking bigot. And you are ready to blame the other immediately as soon as something scares you. You're not causing me to be afraid of the Chinese, but you are causing me to be afraid of you. And you're causing me to lose some respect for you. On a personal level, when you start talking that kind of shit. Shut up. Pay attention. The good information is out there. Okay? Pay attention to the World Health Organization, especially because they're not under control of the White House. Right? The Centers for Disease Control, which reminds me, they changed their webpage today, right? They don't tell you how many people have been tested for this anymore. They don't tell you how many people have died from this anymore. That happened today. They did not make that change just because. They made that change because somebody told them to. Now, whether that was well-intended advice or whether that was advice that was just intended to, you know, preserve the stock market and serve some political agenda, I can't say. I don't know why I wasn't there when it was given. But what I do know is that, again, somebody is making a decision to keep secrets and to limit information. And back to Heinlein, secrecy begets tyranny. When they start keeping secrets, that's when it's time to start getting worried. And they've started keeping secrets, right? I went through Facebook the other day, and I put up a video about this over the weekend, and then I pulled it because there were some mitigating factors that I wasn't sure about. But I don't think that it's an accident that Facebook right now is in the middle of, they've rolled out a new algorithm that just automatically kills comments really fast. And I started noticing that over the weekend. And because what I was talking about was in the context of this coronavirus, I thought it was probably related to that. And I still do, by the way. And I think it's probably well-intended, by the way. I think they're trying to limit disinformation. I think they're trying to limit profiteers and people who are trying to make a buck on this. But what they did was limited. There was a point at which I could not post a link to the World Health Organization. It would immediately be removed as spam if I tried to put it on my local news station's page, or if I tried to put it on the Salt Lake Tribune's page, or if I tried to post it in a group with more than 100,000 people. It would be deleted right away. Now, do I think that's Facebook trying to keep blah, 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 blah? Not the way that sounds, no. But I do think that it is evidence that Facebook is trying to use their algorithms and use their systems to control the flow of information. And while on one hand, I can certainly see the noble intent there, on the other hand, secrecy. Because what if I was a doctor that was trying to post this information? What if I was a doctor that was trying to post this information and I had somebody out there who didn't like me, who had been, you know, abusing Facebook's abuse process for years? So my account has been quietly racking up red flags and I don't even know it because I have no idea how these systems work or anything about them. But now all of a sudden, I can't make comments anymore. It's dangerous, okay? And these are the kinds of things that we have to be aware of. All right, this nonsense, oh, the Chinese did this terrible thing, or this is all a big conspiracy, or on and on and on. Don't buy into that shit. You got to look deeper. If you really want to start unraveling stuff and seeing the scary things that so many of us seem to be addicted to thinking that we are aware of, you got to look a little bit deeper, okay? Because there is some scary stuff going out there. And there's going to be some questions to be answered when this is all said and done. There's no question. Information's being stifled. Resources are being stifled. We're not being told the entire truth by our government. And the biggest reason for that is because our government knows that they are not prepared to handle this. They don't have the resources. They don't have the resources because of the bullshit narrative that we've been sold for 50 years that the federal budget has to be balanced. We don't have the resources because, well, it's not profitable for us. We don't have enough doctors and nurses. I was talking about that before this even came up, right? In my first show, I talked about that. Well, why can't we afford universal health care? We can't afford universal health care. We don't have the people to provide it. Real resources. It's not about the dollars. It's about the real resources. And now you are seeing, right, the culmination of all of those things coming together. And people are going to die because of it. People are going to die because of this. People have died already. Last time I looked, 6 people in Washington State were dead because of these things. Because we're not paying attention. Because we're not thinking clearly. Because we don't want to think of ourselves as being uninformed. Because we don't like to be... Nobody's the asshole in their own movie, right? Nobody's the protagonist in their own feature film. And we all protect our egos and we all protect our interests, however we perceive those interests to be. The reality is, for all of us, our interest is in being our brother's keeper. Our interest is in living cooperatively instead of competitively. That is in our interest. But it doesn't generate money for a small group of people that control all of the narratives. And so we've been dragged into this hyper-competitive, you know, fuck you, buddy, I got mine mentality. This is where it's got us, okay? And I know that right now things don't look too terrible bad, but I don't know. We'll see where it goes. But even the WHO said today, we are in uncharted territory. We have no idea right now. The modern world has not seen something like this before. And yeah, that's a little scary, man. When the experts are saying, I don't know if we're going to be able to handle this. But you know what's scarier than that is when they say, oh yeah, we got it under control, and they don't. I went out yesterday to a Meijer store here in Kalamazoo, not far from where I live. Just ran out because, I mean, I got no resources anyway, but I wanted to pick up a couple of things just to avoid being a burden on my brother and sister-in-law in case we have to lock down for a while. I went to the grocery store. Not a single person had their face covered. Nobody was wearing any kind of gloves. Nobody was even using the little Purell wipes on the shopping carts. Zero precautions. And I'm walking around the place coughing my head off, right? I could be infected with this crap. I was wearing a face mask and gloves too, because I don't want to give it to anybody. I was wearing a bandana. I don't have any face masks, but I put a bandana over my face to try to limit, you know. We're not paying attention, and it's scary. And again, you know, just the privilege thing, right? Well, it's not a problem for me. I'll be fine. I don't know what everybody's so worried about. It's only killing the old people. It's only killing the sick people. It's only killing the poor people. y'all got to snap out of it, man. I mean, I love you guys. I really do. And not you guys, just the people that are watching right now. You know, again, I'm sorry that I lean on my influences so much, but that's why they're influences. You know, Bill Hicks had this line that I just love. He says, "I'm a misanthropic humanist. I think people are great in theory." And that's kind of how I feel, you know? I don't feel negatively towards human beings. I think, you know, my perfect world scenario is that everybody has the opportunity to realize their fullest potential as a human being, and we all work together to make the world a better place for all of us. That's all. Peace, prosperity, progress, and justice. We love each other. We do what we can for each other. That's the world that I'm working for. And this conversation that I've been having here for the last hour, or half hour anyway, is really just me saying, look, you guys, if we'd have been doing what I said we should be doing 20 years ago, 30 years ago, we wouldn't be dealing with this right now. We have this under control. And now I'm afraid it's going to hit us really, really hard before we get our shit together. So if I'm you right now watching this, as soon as it's over, I'm going to the grocery store. If you're not packed up, you know, if you're not loaded up, I'm not saying it's time to, you know, seal your windows and go buy a bunch of ammunition or anything. It's not the last possible minute. What I'm telling you is don't wait for the last possible minute, in large part because the way the government has handled this is just about guaranteed that by the time they come out and say, you better stock up, people are going to flip the fuck out. You're going to see little old ladies fighting over the last can of mayonnaise at every Kmart in this country. Well, there's only about 3 Kmarts left, but you know what I mean. So, I didn't mean for this to get all down and negative. I did want to show you something, though. You know, I spend some time and I'm trying to, you know, do the fundraising thing and blah, blah, blah. And so a lot of people are like, well, what do you need money for? And what do you do this? So do you see my hand here? I'm lagged a little bit on screen, but you can see all this fringing that goes on around my hand, especially when I move it quickly, right? So let me pull back the curtain, so to speak. I'm going to go over here into my management thing. I'm going to turn off the chroma key ability. Let me get out of there and bang, here we go. Filters. All right, so you can see behind me, I'm sitting in front of this green screen, right? And you can see when I turn that off, the video picture improves. It really shows up around the hair, by the way, right? So this is part of what I'm talking to you about. You see that stuff in the low quality of this picture, and so on and so forth. I'm shooting in 1080p. It should look okay, but it doesn't, because I'm shooting through a $50 webcam, right? So this kind of thing, right? If I've got good lights, if I've got a room that's properly painted, this is just a blanket. This is just a flannel blanket, right? If I've got good lights, it works better. If I'm in a room, a proper green room, right? Not a green room as in the backstage area for the Tonight Show, but a green screen room or a chroma key room, then things look a little bit better, right? And I can get back into better graphics, and I can take the time to do that, and I could take the time to do better research, and I could take the time to write my own intro outro music instead of using the same damn actor's song that I've been putting behind every video I've recorded since 2001, right? Little things like that. So that's kind of I wanted to throw that out there, just because the people had asked me about it and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, now you can see right now, watch what happens. You see how it gets all blocky when I pull my hair out and you can't see half of it, right? If I was operating with higher quality equipment, that wouldn't be a problem. It would look more like your TV news. And they're all sitting in front of green screens too, right? Trevor Noah is sitting in front of a green screen. And so, yeah, I just wanted to show that to you guys, just as a little sidebar, a little indicator as to what it is that the people like me use their money for. So that's my little speech about that. And thanks for coming to my TED Talk. So yeah, other than that, we're going to see what happens. Right now, I have a sneaking suspicion that the Democratic Party is going to have a very serious problem when it comes to the convention, because I think Bernie Sanders may just roll in there with enough delegates, with a majority of the delegates rather than just a plurality. Last time he was ahead, but not ahead far enough to take away plausible deniability. I think this time he's going to have the people to do it. So we'll see how it shakes out. We'll see how Tuesday shakes out. Thank you all for listening once again. I will be back tomorrow night at 8 o'clock, and probably to, you know, eat half my words or whatever, but that's life. And that's, the risks that you take in this line of work. In the meantime, you know the drill, you know where to find me. I got sidetracked with this coronavirus thing this weekend, doing a bunch of research for that and fighting with Facebook and everything else. And so I did not get my Patreon campaign finished, but that should be ready to roll. Man, I'm hoping by the middle of the week. It just depends on how things go. I've got some real life stuff that's going to keep me from getting as much work done as I would like to. But hopefully here in the next couple of days, I'll be able to officially launch that and I can start pointing people to it. Thanks again for stopping by. Hack, it was great to see you. I don't know this chat thing on the control panel for the YouTube stream. Doesn't seem to be super reliable when it comes to sending chats through, but I did get a couple from Hack and responded to those. If I'm not seeing you say something, I apologize for that. If you're asking questions that I'm not answering, it's not because I'm trying to be a dick or ignore you. It's because I don't see them. So thanks a lot again for joining us. It's 57, so I'm going to go ahead and call it a night. Thank you once again for watching The John Henry Show on YouTube Live at 8 p.m. Eastern, Monday through Friday, and I will see you again tomorrow night. Hey there, everybody. It's John Henry from johnhenry.us. Thank you for watching and stopping by my YouTube channel. Like the sign says, I am independent media, so I don't have a big PAC or an organization or a nonprofit that is behind me supporting this work. It is all me and it is all you. So if you can help out, you can see the information here at the bottom of the screen that links to my various fundraising and crowdfunding sources, as well as the Facebook page and the Twitter in my website. Share it around, spread it around, and thank you very much once again for watching. Have a great day.